Scientists have power by virtue of the respect commanded by the discipline. We live with poets and politicians, preachers and philosophers. All have their way of knowing, and all are valid in their proper domain. The world is too complex and interesting for one way to hold all the answers. Stephen Jay Gould.
Let's share silence together for the time it takes for about 6 or 7 deep breaths. So there was a leg of my career journey that moved me toward professional librarianship. I love libraries, and I had several library jobs as a young adult. Planning to attend library school one semester, I took courses in computer programming, Fortran, and statistics. I enjoyed both of these classes, and now I appreciate the special ability I have to reminisce about the early days of what we now call information technology. Stacks of cards, long printed out scrolls of paper, massive mainframe computers in dark basements. I also appreciate the perspective I gained on the various things statistics can mean. As Mark Twain wrote, and he was quoting Benjamin Disraeli, there are 3 kinds of lies: lies, damn lies, and statistics. Since that time, the anatomy of information storage and the means of information dissemination and access have changed so radically as to require we virtually redefine reality, knowledge, and truth. Pluto itself probably has not changed very much, but our understanding of it has been utterly transformed. Lately, I've noticed a disconnect between journalists and fact checkers. I'm not sure I was even aware of the term fact checker until recently. This makes sense, of course. Journalists used to be responsible for their own fact checking. It used to be the case that journalists earned their credentials and were vetted by their editors and publishers, who presumably had some good credentials of their own. Now, for good or ill, anyone can publish anything on the internet, basing their claims on knowledge and expertise they may or may not possess. If we do our homework, we can find reliable sources, but this requires some skill and effort. While researching the history of the term fact checker, I found this bullet-pointed warning at the top of the entry on Wikipedia. This article needs additional citations for verification. Second, the sum of this article's listed sources may not be reliable. I found this kind of reassuring. Unlike Wikipedia, New Yorker magazine is old school. It publishes only writers with the highest qualifications and credentials. One of them is Jill Lepore, who is a staff writer for The New Yorker and a Harvard professor. In her article, After the Fact, she outlines a history of our ways of knowing. In the end, she writes, it comes down to this. The history of truth is cockamamie, and lately it's been getting cockamamier. In the medieval period, Lepore explains, trials by ordeal or by combat were used to claim God's judgment on one side or the other. You might remember silly examples of this, demonstrated in the 1975 classic, Monty Python and the Holy Grail. Anybody? Yeah, okay, yeah. So it wasn't until the Magna Carta in the year 1215 that evidence was required as a measure of innocence or guilt. From the legal realm, the concept of factual evidence spread in the next few centuries to science, history, and journalism. Lepore observes that political discourse in the current campaign season, and she was writing back in March, or published back in March of this year, resembles trial by combat. Many people no longer trust evidence or engage in rational thought. I found the article compelling, and at the same time, I challenge her assumption of a binary opposition between fact and falsehood, between trial by evidence and by combat, between science and religion. Instead, I invite you to consider a more complex model of knowing. I invite you to challenge positions that require an either-or judgment. Very often, both and thinking loosens a Gordian knot. Two profound realities can both be true. Physicist Niels Bohr introduced the principle of complementarity in 1927, around the same time that Clyde Tombaugh was searching for Pluto. Everyday knowledge may be sorted into true or false, as on a test or in a game of Trivial Pursuit. However, deeper truths can contradict each other and both be true. The more profound the truth, according to this principle, the more likely its opposite is also true. It turns out that what qualifies as evidence in a given situation depends on what questions are asked. Results of scientific studies depend on how the studies are designed. It is, in part at least, a creative process and not necessarily simply rational. So, scientific studies do vary in quality, and the results vary in reliability. Our fourth Unitarian Universalist principle calls us to affirm and promote a free and responsible search for truth and meaning. Without doubt, our search is free. In that, it isn't restricted by any doctrine or creed. We may seek truth and meaning wherever our individual quests may lead. However, the search must also be responsible. Responsible to whom? Responsible for what? We can look to the other UU principles to understand what responsibility might mean in this context. All of us are responsible for justice, equity, and compassion toward others. Affirming the worth and dignity of every person and promoting mutual acceptance makes us accountable to each other within our UU congregations and in our wider society as well. The goal of world community and respect for the interdependent web broaden our responsibilities still further. Use of the democratic process, which is one of our principles, implies involvement and engagement within the various social and cultural spheres each of us inhabits. Freedom from religious dogma does not exempt us from moral responsibility for whatever it is we hold to be true. Truth and meaning are what we seek. Let me ask you, does there really exist truth with capital T? And that's not a rhetorical question. If so, I believe it lies beyond the grasp of humankind. Truth claims are often made in the service of abusive power. When we speak our truth or speak truth to power, we must invoke the narratives of our lived experience to work for social change on the side of love and justice. I'm not confident that objective reality is within our grasp any more than absolute truth, though our methods of pursuing it continue to improve. Scientific advances have made our lives better in so many ways, and they have also brought us lethal weapons and climate change. While truth and objective reality may exist beyond our reach, I understand meaning to be an entirely human artifact. We attribute meaning to our experience by shaping stories to explain it, to remember it, and to communicate it to others. But let's be cautious. Like truth claims, the stories we tell can and do promote injustice. For example, in recent years, reliable scholarship on racial difference has conclusively discredited the stories used over the past several centuries to justify exploiting and oppressing people of color. It's important to note that many of the narratives have been advanced in the context of scientific inquiry, many of these narratives alleging inferiority of other people. We are morally responsible for the meaning we make of our life experience historically, politically, scientifically, and religiously. Given that certain knowledge of absolute truth eludes us, and that we are ourselves responsible for attributing meaning to our individual and collective experience, what guides us? What grounds us? What spiritual resources can help us act in accordance with our principles? First, I call on the gift of imagination. Stories of other people's experience can effectively broaden the reach of our empathy and compassion. There's much to learn from fiction, biography, mythology and history, films, books, and yes, binge watching. Second, I recommend cultivating respectful, sincere curiosity in unfamiliar settings or with new people. Curiosity alleviates anxiety and boosts awareness as it fosters positive relationships. It expands the horizons of our knowledge and enhances our memory. A stance of curiosity helps us undertake the risks and challenges often involved in spiritual growth. Third, I encourage you to embrace humility. As mortal beings, our knowledge will always be limited, no matter how much we learn. My own experience is that the more I learn, the less I know. Humility, in the context of cultural difference, actually increases our cultural competence. We are able to choose humility as distinct from humiliation. That's a different thing. Humility subverts the tendency to perfectionism and helps inoculate us against feelings of shame. It soothes the soul to recognize that it's not just about me. Finally, in the free and responsible search for truth and meaning, I lift up the search itself as a moral and spiritual value. It is the search, the quest, the questions that enrich our lives. What really matters is wanting to know. As we find our way in life, we envision truth and meaning as the shining holy grail, barely visible on the wide horizon. With our sidekicks, imagination, curiosity, and humility, along with our beloved fellow travelers, let us work to embody our principles with love and justice as we create and live out our stories together. So may it be.